This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Wrestling Network fans, family, friends, fiduciaries. That's as many F words as I can think without getting us kicked off of this network. Welcome to your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's main event, episode 174. I am one of your hosts, the Godfather Nate Milton. Great to be with everyone this week as we continue this game of musical chairs with our tri-hosts here. But let me bring in the other leg of this two-legged stool. I don't even know if those are a thing, but we'll make it a thing this week because he is the conscience of Place to Be Nation. He is holding us up, much like that proverbial two-legged stool. Ladies and gentlemen, Brother Steve Willie.
Thank you. I'm just gotten back from my apology to China for, and I hope that I've been learning Mandarin Chinese the last 10 years, and I'm very, 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 very sorry that I took the third leg off the stool, and I hope you all can forgive me.
We can't see you, Steve. It's a podcast. How are you, brother? It's been a few weeks since we talked, because the last episode of Main Event 173 was when I was in my Johnson & Johnson vaccine haze.
Yes, you're Team Johnson & Johnson as opposed to Team Moderna, which is probably because you were out for 2 days.
Yeah.
My oldest kid just had Team Pfizer. And they fell asleep at school twice the day after. It's the one time you can be excused for falling asleep at school, I suppose.
Yeah. But yeah, I've got a friend who, I guess it's a T Public store. That's what she has. I was trying to remember the site. But she's made up like team shirts for each of the vaccines.
That's brilliant.
Which are amazing. So I believe it's Zell's Bells. I think that's what you can type, but I'm going to have to give me a Johnson & Johnson, Team Johnson & Johnson shirt, because I think the logo she put underneath it, they look like the old baseball shirts.
Okay, yeah.
And it's like, Team Johnson & Johnson, we hit it and quit it. I'm like, yes, that is beautiful. I'll send you $20 for that one.
Making that money. I was reading an article today. I don't remember where it was at, but all the people who were making masks for Etsy and how much money they made. And then as soon as literally the day after they said if you're vaccinated, their like sales just plummeted. And there were people making like 100K of sales of masks on Etsy.
I believe it. I think my sister and maybe even my mother would like. And my mother just discovered Etsy during the pandemic, and like she's buying all of these masks. Because you know you got to coordinate which outfit, Steve Willie.
Yes, of course you do.
but there is a reason that we're missing one of the members of the tri-host, Steve Willie, and it's not because he's on that. He's on that Moderna trip, like our good friend Chris Ealy. It's because I don't want to work the listeners, Steve. I don't want to work them. Let's shoot straight, brother.
We're honest.
Tonight we're talking a lot of AEW, and you know, Scott Criscola just, you know, he kind of lost his smile for the show this week.
Yeah, it was coincidental. You might say that. I'm not going to argue with you. You can have your own opinion. But yeah, I mean, we can talk Jon Moxley the whole show.
Oh, it's going to just wall-to-wall Jon Moxley, Orange Cassidy coverage. That's what happens when Scotty's out of town. So, but yes, Scotty will be back for the next episode. So, best wishes and thoughts to Brother Scott. But you know what they say, Steve Willie, when the cat is away, the mice will talk nonstop about AEW.
And we're gonna, as we have Double or Nothing coming up this weekend, on a nice Sunday Memorial Day weekend, which I really enjoy those, because then I can actually not worry about staying up late and watching and having to get up for work the next morning. I do miss the Saturday pay-per-views. That was kind of nice as well. But Memorial Day, I think they are announcing All Out for Labor Day weekend. I believe the first week in September. I'm just starting to get some news about that, because other organizations are going to be running in Chicago that weekend. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe Scott started just binging AEW and wanted to catch up before the show. That could be, because, yeah, I mean, Tony Khan has already dropped some little hints for Scott. I think he listened to episode 173 of the show, because he heard Scott upset about a certain NWA champion appearing too much on AEW. So we can talk about that in a little bit.
Yes. Before we get to our AEW, though, we do want to take our quick trip around the wrestling world, Steve Willie, and talk about some of the news and notes from the past week or so. And I guess we can start with the flamethrower, because the only thing for sure, to quote that great man Sting, when it comes to WWE commentary, is nothing's for sure, Steve.
This one shocked me this morning. I'm at the office on Thursday, and I knew we were taping tonight, so I wanted to do a quick little rundown of the news so I can be on it. And I knew that, Aiden Burke, is that his name? I haven't watched Raw for the last few weeks, and as soon as he started, he was gone.
Formerly of ESPN.
Yeah. So within Adnan Burke, yep. So within 7 weeks, he was gone. So that was a couple days ago, and not really a surprise, because there was a talk; it just wasn't a good fit, and I know Vince McMahon really didn't have much of a say in that, and he wasn't good.
Like, and I say this as somebody who likes what Adnan did with the baseball coverage.
Okay,
like I thought Adnan was a really good sports announcer, but you can't just put him on your flagship show, even though SmackDown is still the highest rated WWE program. Raw is still, seen as the flagship, and you just can't throw this guy out there cold, raw, so to speak, and expect him to flourish. Like he just wasn't good. And I'm not a Tom Phillips guy, and we'll talk about Tom Phillips here in a second, Steve, but he had me wishing for Tom Phillips to return to that desk, because he just wasn't a good fit.
No, and it didn't seem like his heart was really in it. And if you're a professional announcer used to doing sports for big-time television, I can't imagine it's very enjoyable and quite a shock to the system, honestly, to have one Vincent Kennedy McMahon shouting in your ear. Sure. Imagine sitting down for the first time, and he didn't seem to know that much about wrestling, which is fine. You can learn as you go along. But to have someone shouting in your ear, telling you what to do the entire time, didn't seem exactly like a match made in heaven.
No, I'm assuming when he was at ESPN, John Skipper wasn't in his ear constantly during Baseball Tonight.
you gotta get over John Kruk. Get him over. Get his one testicle over.
Talk more about the unwritten rules. People love that. People love that kind of thing, pal.
Throw at them. So, yeah, I mean, was your thought that Tom Phillips was just going to go back to Raw?
Yeah, it just made the most sense. Like, and here's why I feel a little bad for Tom, because he was always the rebound announcer. Whenever we'd bring somebody new in that didn't work, they tried the D.O. Madden experiment, didn't work. Let's bring Tom back. We tried Adnan Verk here, didn't work. And I thought they were going to just, put Tom right back in, because As much as I think Tom Phillips is just kind of average, and that's not an insult. It's just, you know, I just feel like he's average. I think Tom and Byron and whoever the third man would be, you know, Corey or when Samoa Joe was out there, I thought that worked, you know, for what they were trying to do. And at least Tom was competent in a way that Adnan and Dio Madden, in my opinion, weren't.
Yeah, and what surprised me, and we didn't really say, but today, as we're taping, Tom Phillips, that was amongst about 60 other people who got released from the company over the last couple of days. You know, those darn budget cuts when you have record revenue. You know, that's what big companies like to do. You got to help the shareholders along. But yeah, Tom Phillips was released, and even if they didn't put him on Raw right away and just bring him back, and they had other ideas for him. When Adnan got assigned to Raw, they gave him a promotion. They had him doing a lot of talent management. They had him in charge of a lot of the digital. And so they noted that it was a promotion. And then 7 weeks later, you are gone.
Yeah, I thought that, like, this is a Raw deal for Tom. And again, I was not thoroughly enamored with his announcing work, but there's gonna be no shortage of suitors for a guy like Tom Phillips. I think you know, if you're one of the smaller companies and you're looking to bolster your announce team, Tom Phillips slides right in. You know, with credibility, with presence on screen, I think Tom Phillips can slide in there. You know, and if, like, who knows if Tom even wants to still do wrestling? Because I could easily see Tom Phillips as, like, the midday news announcer in some mid-market town.
Memphis.
Yes. And now here's Tom Phillips with your traffic. But, yeah, like, I hope he lands on his feet, and I'm sure he will, because I'm sure he got a nice parting gift from the company. That wasn't delivered in a trash bag. But it feels very much like with Raw, because I think SmackDown has been really good, you know, particularly with the Roman Reigns stuff, Steve. But it feels like with Raw, they're still trying to figure out what's the direction for this show post-WrestleMania.
Yeah, and there's been more and more coming out about Vince McMahon's role in both Raw and SmackDown, and sometimes just not being there or coming there the day of the show and completely rewriting it. And there's a history of that too.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to have any kind of direction when you're just ripping up the script each time. You're at that point, you're just looking for short-term gains. Mm-hmm. And I think that at least in SmackDown, with in terms of the main event scene, you're seeing long-term planning, and that's very easily with Roman Reigns and the Usos. That's been the most successful story that they've had over, not just since WrestleMania, but since Roman's been back.
And I think what makes it work, what makes the Roman story work besides the performance, is that you have that plan, Steve. You have that roadmap, and they're taking their time with a lot of these elements. Whereas, as much as I am a fan of Bobby Lashley, I feel like a lot of the stuff with him and even going back to the dissolution of the Hurt Business was just microwaved.
Yeah,
like, actually, those are stories you could have told for months, and we told them in a month.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a friend of mine just yesterday, a couple of friends, how that seemingly came out of nowhere. And there was, you know, a little bit of dissension with Cedric Alexander getting too excited. But then something that were, in my opinion, besides Drew, I think they were the best act on Raw, the four of them, even when they would hop onto Raw Underground with Bobby Lashley and MVP. And just that all of a sudden, all right, well, that story goes, line is gone, and we're not even going to really see Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander except on main event.
Well, that's the thing. Like, again, talking about having a plan, it would be one thing if you were going to do something with Cedric and with Shelton.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're right back to where they were, and maybe even in a worse position than they were before the Hurt Business.
And so who does that help? Like, I don't know who that helps at all. Like, how that makes the show better when you, like, why would I get involved in some of these newer talents when mm-hmm. they might just disappear for no apparent reason?
Yeah, and like you said, like with Shelton, yes, or Cedric, they were playing the dissension angle, but compare that to how long they drew out, you know, the Randy Orton thing with Evolution back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was something that you knew was happening, but they built to it. And we got literally a 2-week build to the breakup of the Hurt Business.
Yeah. And it really a shame for Shelton and Cedric, because one went from a younger kind of not even mid-card to up into the main event. And Shelton, who has always been very good, you know, probably at the end stage of his career, mm-hmm. getting that one last run where he really hasn't been much on TV, really in a decade, to be honest, because he had that run with Ring of Honor and then the run in Japan mm-hmm. where it was just kind of, you know, tag team champion with Charlie Haas, speaking of Where Are They Now, and then working in Japan and then coming back and really just not being on television, just being one of the many roster members that have nothing for them.
And that's a story you could have told. Like, after the breakup, you could have built to a Cedric or Shelton Bobby match where, mm-hmm. you know, Shelton's like, he's got his one last shot. And that's a story you tell leading up to a pay-per-view for a month or 6 weeks. But again, like, I don't know if they have the plan, and if they do have a plan, how much of that plan is thrown out the night of because, you know, Grandpa Vince is back in town.
Yes. And then how much?
And Grandpa Vince wants to see Alexa Bliss do magic tricks.
And she'll
and that's not a euphemism.
Yes. Slime coming out of her crown.
That also is not a euphemism.
So how much, and the reason I said at the top that I looked at this stuff in the morning before I started work is because, you know, in that you're at work in the morning, you have a lot of stuff to do, and you're just kind of quick skim stuff. And I read, well, who's going to replace Mr. Adnan Kirk? And I said, Jimmy Smits? What does that say, Jimmy Smits? From NYPD?
That would be amazing.
So what do you know about Jimmy Smith? Because that is a name that I have not heard before, as I put you right on the spot.
Like, wasn't Jimmy Smith in the Star Wars movies?
Yes, I think he was. Like, Jimmy Smith on NYPD Blue.
I think, and I might be confusing him with Benjamin Bratt, because they... To me, they're very similar, but I thought Jimmy Smits was in the Star Wars prequel trilogy.
He could have been.
As Leia's
he
father.
He was on the end of the West Wing.
Mm.
Yes, he was, Senator Bail Organa in Rogue War.
Yep. So, yeah, that would have been amazing. Jimmy Smits as your new announcer. But no, with Jimmy Smith, all I know is I believe he was a former MMA fighter and MMA announcer, and according to his Twitter, he hasn't watched wrestling since high school. So there's a concept that works.
Right up Vince's alley, and then so he'll be very happy that he doesn't have that wrestling stink on him. However, like, then he'll like start, and he won't have any wrestling knowledge.
Like, have we not learned our lesson from Adnan Virk or Mike Adamly, Steve Willey?
Oh, my gosh. Mike Adamly.
Like, I think there are announcers that, you know, may not have watched wrestling in a while, Steve, that could make the transition work. But they, like, I think they have to be such an outsized personality that it compensates for that lack of knowledge. Like, I think Stephen A. Smith on Monday Night Raw could be amazing.
Except he'd just start ranting about the Dallas Cowboys for no apparent reason.
You're telling me, Corey Graves, that Bobby Lashley can't beat Drew McIntyre? That's blasphemous.
So we got Stephen A. Smith, Corey Graves, and Jimmy Smits will be your next Monday Night Raw.
That's a dream team. It's a Hall of Fame announce table. Yeah, I don't know how this is going to work. And here's the thing, Scotty. Like, we are getting Scotty. See, we miss Scotty. Here's the thing, Steve. We're getting close to the time where we're going to start ramping up for SummerSlam. And is that where you want to be breaking in a new announcer on your flagship show?
Yeah.
Like, why not just go back to Tom Phillips, at least until after SummerSlam?
And just like Tom Phillips, he worked his way up. He had that practice in NXT. He, I believe he started NXT UK with Nigel McGuinness. I think he was the lead announcer originally. He did 205 Live. So getting some reps on lesser watched shows so that he's at least ready for the formula of a Raw or a SmackDown. Whereas, and it looks like, as I was just going to doing some research, Jimmy Smith does have like an MMA show on Sirius XM. So comfortable in front of the mic, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But this is a whole different world.
It's like, yeah, I did. I read he was a podcaster. So it's like, we just handing out raw gigs to podcasters. Maybe that's where Scott is this weekend.
Yeah.
He's taking a trip by Titan Towers to see if he can angle for that position.
He's right there. He lives pretty much right there.
See if he can cut a deal with his boy Triple H.
Yep.
But yes, and that's the thing. Like, I'm not, like, I don't know Jimmy Smith's work, so I can't critique it as an announcer. But just like speaking personally, Steve, like, I think there's a lot that I can do on a microphone. I would be terrible in that position just because if you throw somebody in on that stage with Vince in their ear, just cold, it's not going to work. You do need to get reps. Like, it would be one thing if they brought this Jimmy Smith guy into NXT. But to have him debut on Raw, like, he could prove us wrong. I just don't think it's going to work.
No, I don't. And I hope so. I hope it works for him. You know, my long, close personal relationship I've had with Jimmy Smith, which started a few hours ago. Yeah, it boggles my mind sometimes. And this is just, you know, this is a wrestling show. Obviously, we're pretty well immersed in the world of wrestling. But this is like a big business move right here. This whole thing, you know, cutting all these employees after the record revenue year and record profits, and then making seemingly unwarranted decisions on the whim of a higher up. And, you know, they could, yeah. And yet Corey Graves is still there this whole time.
Yeah, so I'm that like, you could tell my enthusiasm level for anything WWE outside of SmackDown and NXT is severely low right now, Steve.
I actually watched 205 Live for the first time for a couple weeks.
I didn't even know that was still a thing.
Yeah, it's a nice 30-minute show.
Like, who is on that roster? Like, why does that show exist?
They have about, it feels like they have about six people on the show, six to eight people on the roster at any given time. Tony Nese, who else
Tony
is there?
Tony Nese is still kicking around.
Tony Nese is pretty much, he's like the OG of 205 Live, I think they call him. The Bollywood Boys, and then they bring in a couple, they brought in three new people. And I don't know their, and I know their indie names, like Anthony Henry, who was with Evolve for a while. And then Alex Zane, who I really enjoyed because I only saw a couple matches of him, but he seemed to name all of his maneuvers based on Taco Bell menu items.
And then that's a gimmick. That's a money making gimmick.
Yes, I think his finisher in WWE is called the Sauce. So I tried it out, and it was like, and then they do like a quick recap of whatever cruiserweight story they have going on NXT, and I'm like, this is a nice little show to watch. I was just like, I knew this couple guys were debuting, so I figured I'd check them out, and got a good review. And yeah, it was, if you want to watch WWE and not watch Raw, I mean, this is 1/6 of the length of Raw. Have a nice little 8-minute match, two of them. You're in and out.
I might have to check this out. This Tony Nese vanity project. Yes. They've got going on.
The gatekeeper of 205 Live, Tony Nese. Make your money, Tony Nese.
So any other WWE news before we move on to another story here, Steve Willie?
No, I have not seen anything really come down. They have Hell in a Cell coming up in a couple weeks.
Yep.
I think Charlotte versus Rhea Ripley is the one match that I know is happening.
Which, again, talking about storytelling, I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, listeners, how much we love Charlotte, Rhea, and Asuka on this show, but the story they've been telling between the three makes no sense. Like, this match doesn't need to happen, because Rhea's beat Asuka at least twice. Rhea's beat Charlotte once, I think. Charlotte's beat Asuka a couple times, and then Asuka's beaten Charlotte.
Yeah.
So by the power of the power of deductive reasoning, by the power of transference, is Steve Willie, Rhea's beaten both of them numerous times. So this match doesn't need to happen. But we don't have anybody that we've built up that can move into that spot. So.
And we have a Hell in the Cell match, and we need it to end a feud, that whether or not it's an actual feud or not, got to throw it
and,
in.
And at least we'll get at least we'll get a good match.
Right. Yeah, the women's Hell in the Cell matches have actually been better than the men's matches, in my opinion. I mean, I loved Roman versus Jey Uso last year, but all the Sasha Banks matches that they had.
Yeah.
In the South, like the last 3 years have been really good. And then, yeah, the other match that's been announced and then we can move on is Lashley versus either Drew McIntyre or Kofi Kingston. Which, just that one just came out of nowhere. Kofi Kingston getting up and just getting a freak roll up on Bobby Lashley and being put into this program.
I'm thinking they'll go with Kofi just because Drew, like, that's a match you can just save till SummerSlam, that rematch. And Kofi can get his brief shine here. That's the other thing. Again, like, the audacity of this company, Steve Willie, to try to microwave some semblance of Kofi Mania with this Kofi Bobby storyline. It's like, no, nah, like, Kofi Mania was a steak, Steve Willie, that they just cooked to perfection, took some time with it, let it marinate. This is like a hamburger that you just put steak rub on. Like, it's not the same thing. Just because you put A1 sauce on your hamburger patty doesn't make it a steak.
Do you think they'll do like a draw with that McIntyre double DQ, kind of like what is happening with the AEW title match, and you'll get a three-way inside the Hell in the Cell between the three of them?
That could actually be interesting. Just Kofi as this pinball in between these two giants, these two hosses. That could actually be a fun little match.
Yeah, because
and you don't really want to beat Drew heading into SummerSlam, so.
Right. And otherwise, and I was just kind of checking, this is the last no crowd pay-per-view event. Because I said, maybe they put Kofi in there because they're worried about what the reception will be like to Bobby Lashley versus Drew McIntyre again, and get the fan favorite in there. But nope, it's in front of the screen.
Yeah, that's the last bit of WWE news, Steve, that they're coming back.
Yeah. So that
are you excited?
No, not at all. Let me tell you this, though. I am intrigued. And this isn't like some sort of hot take. I've seen other, I've heard other people say this too, but what will the reaction be? WrestleMania is always an outlier,
right,
in terms of crowds. That's not your typical every week wrestling crowd. So the first time you get a regular Raw crowd, a regular SmackDown taping crowd, what are the responses going to be to various storylines and Bobby Lashley as champion, or, you know, Ripley or Bianca or Roman? You know, the fans at WrestleMania booed Roman, which was actually kind of surprising to me that they went along with the storyline as opposed to cheering him because he's been kind of cool. What they can't control the response anymore.
They can't, but I also think the first few crowds that they get, the first few live crowds back, will be the most easily pliable, Steve.
Yeah.
Because they'll just be happy to be there.
And you're seeing, and like with AEW, because they've been running the same building constantly, unless it's a huge match, you know, the crowd isn't as into some of it. They're actually had been losing attendance because, you know, how many times are you going to have people come out every other Wednesday and Thursday to the same place?
Right.
You know, we all got stuff going on. And, you know, that's a commitment. Most people can't even commit to, you know, working out once a week and driving over to Daly's place to check out your favorite AEW thing. So, yeah, like the first few, you know, you'll can get pretty excited, but, you know, I've gone to a couple basketball games, and if the action was, you got the excitement at the beginning, but once the action died down, it was just kind of quiet. And then it would pick up again.
Okay. Yes. Sorry, by the way, sorry about your indefinite suspension from Madison Square Garden, but you shouldn't have spit at Trae Young. He's a national treasure.
How is the popcorn story getting more press than person spinning on Trae Young
in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, maybe they didn't have the whole video because you just, like, I saw the video and just saw just the spit come out at Trae Young. Didn't see where it was coming from, and, you know, Trae Young didn't really notice it. And Russell Westbrook, maybe just because Westbrook had such a big reaction.
Yes, because Westbrook knows how to sell.
Yes. Injured ankle and popcorn.
That's our WWE news. I know there was some New Japan news over the week, Steve. I am not abreast of it. I haven't been keeping up with it. But if you want to let the people know your thoughts on it, the floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, well, the big news that have been going on the last couple of weeks is that Will Ospreay surprisingly vacated the heavyweight championship that he pretty much just won a couple months ago from Kota Ibushi. And the reason being is that he hurt his neck in the match he had against Shingo Takagi, I believe, on May 7th. I can't remember what happened years ago, but I can remember things like, I remember actual dates of wrestling, of current wrestling pay-per-view events. So about May 7th, he had this injury. And then there were some rumbles a couple days after that there's some dissent amongst some of the foreign talent, the gaijins in New Japan, around how New Japan itself, or maybe just the country of Japan, has been handling COVID. I know that Fit Finley came out and said that he's been talking with his son, David. He's gone back, you know, he was tag champs with Juice and Impact for a couple months and was doing some NJPW Strong, but, you know, they're away from home. The NJPW had to cancel several events, as all of the wrestling companies needed to, because there's a state of emergency in Japan due to the pandemic getting worse there because people are just not getting vaccinated. So you have, I mean, two of your biggest stars in Jay White and Will Ospreay are, you know, from New Zealand and Great Britain, respectively. And I know that Ospreay had been going back and forth, and now they're just, you know, they're stranded there. So there's, you know, some murmurs about, like, you know, what are we doing? Are there other opportunities? They started with shows back up. The attendance is way down. I want to say they were like 200, 300, 400 people in attendance, and they've had to postpone a couple of their shows. We still don't know if their second biggest show of the year, Dominion, is happening on June 7th. I mean, and it's not a New Japan thing. I don't want to try to say right. that they're doing things wrong. They had a few people come down with COVID, but I mean, there's the Olympics there, supposedly coming up in just a couple months. And one of their biggest backers, which is a leading newspaper in Japan, who's one of their sponsors, actually just wrote an editorial this week that they should cancel the Olympics altogether. So this is not just a finger pointing at wrestling companies there, but as it affects New Japan, it's really hurting them between canceling shows. I think they had seven active wrestlers, including Okada, actually contract the virus. I know that El Desperado, who was the junior champion, had it really bad. He just yesterday came out with a series of tweets describing how bad that he had it and was the worst illness he had and had it really, really difficult time for a good week. So I think I talked last time, I kind of canceled my account for now just because there really weren't any shows and there's so much other wrestling to watch, like 205 Live, the Tony Nese Experience. So I don't even think have any matches announced for Dominion, which is in, I believe, 11 days from now.
Wow.
Because it was originally they were going to have those baseball stadium shows that we talked about a few weeks ago. And those, like I said, those got postponed. No, actually they have, let's see, Wrestle Grand Slam in Tokyo Dome. They still have scheduled for this weekend. And it's going to be, so let's see, Saturday, May 29th. Would you like to hear the card? Today is the 27th as we're taping this.
Okay.
We have Kazuchika Okada, the challenger, against the champion, who we don't know. Full cards will be announced at a later date. That is your card for Wrestle Grand Slam in Tokyo Dome.
I mean, looking at it on the bright side, Steve Willie, you know, you're supposed to be the positive person here at the network. What that's telling me is we're going to get a 3-hour Okada match, which could be amazing.
There you go.
Just, we've got one match. It's a one match show, literally.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Dominion June 6th, I believe June 7th, our time. And they have tickets on sale, but there are no matches announced for it. So I'm wondering if they just know they're going to be postponed again. They must have some sort of inside information that the order of emergency, which I believe is ending this weekend, is going to be renewed, because there's no other reason why they're going to have a show in 2 days that it does not have any matches announced.
It's weird. You know, we talked a little bit before the show about just how serious Japan took COVID in the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's almost like an inverse of what happened over here in America. And so now for them on the back end to be dealing with this, it's something that, you know, we've talked about, Steve, over on TDT Talks, the show that we've got the longest run up to our season 2 premiere in the history of season 2 premieres. But I feel like, you know, we've talked about how this is not something that is just going to disappear overnight. This is something that we might end up having to like live with this, like we live with the flu.
Right. Correct.
And it's just about managing more so than let's eliminate COVID. We can defeat COVID. And COVID's just sitting there like, you thought you could.
Yeah. The reverse United States, I think I called it before we went on the air. They take diseases very seriously. You know, they mask up when they have colds.
Yeah.
They mask up during flu season, even if they don't have the flu, and took COVID very seriously, shut everything down. And then, I wanted to research this coming up this weekend, because I wanted to read and understand there's something in Japan's history why they're so anti-vaccine, which I can understand with, you know, the United States and history of testing medicine on humans, especially minorities. So I'm wondering where that came from, because I have read quite a bit about the history of, or I've heard quite a bit about that there's a history there and a reasons why it's not happening that has nothing to do with a lack of vaccines available, but it's more the confidence.
Just the hesitancy to take it.
Yeah. So yeah, it's going to really hurt this. And I'm a big Olympic sports fan. And, you know, I don't generally watch those sports except maybe track and field during the time in between the Olympics. But I do get excited about watching all those different sports. And I'll be a little sad if the Olympics don't happen. But at this point, it seems like it's their own darn fault.
Yeah. So, like, hopefully, again, you know, we're not scientists on this show.
No.
I don't think that's a bold claim to make, Steve.
I have a minor in physics. I don't think that's going to help us.
But I think that, again, this is something that all of these countries, because, yeah, right, like, it's not enough for one country to get the problem under wraps. Mm-hmm. Because it's a global pandemic, which means everything, much like, you know, these Marvel shows, it's all connected. You know, you just can't have WandaVision over here in its own little bubble, Steve, despite the fact that that was the whole premise of the show, now that I'm speaking it out loud, and not have that affect the rest of the MCU. So hopefully Japan can kind of get things straight, because, yeah, like, wrestling aside, just for the health of the people over there, they, you know, I hope they can get a handle on that.
Yeah, just for wrestling and, you know, the Olympics in general. But before we go on to our next topic of AEW and the preview for Double or Nothing, what we can do is we can pause right now so Scott can stop listening to the podcast. Then he can go on and do some other things. Can go hop in the elevator at Triple H, and we can check out what else is going on in the Place to Be Network and the Kings of Sport Network.
Yes, well, I'll start. I'll start with the Kings of Sport here, Steve Willie, because as you know, you and Scotty are both patrons of our Patreon, the Kings of Sport, patreon.com/the Kings of Sport. We've got over 150 hours. Like, one of these days, I'll actually sit down and recount the hours, because right now these are just numbers. I'm like Vince, like, these there's no concrete evidence behind the numbers I'm throwing out, but, like, I know it's more than 100 but not quite 200, so 150 sounds right. 150 hours of content, audio, video. We've started to post a lot of the original episodes of the Kings of Sport podcast on our Wayback Weekend series as we approach episode 300, Steve Willie.
Oof.
So episode 290 is going to drop this weekend, and then, you know, we're on the road to 300 episodes. But in the meantime, you can check out the Patreon, where we've got, right now, I want to say we're up to episode 10.
Yep.
In terms of our classic episodes, and yeah, so we've already had the episode where we talked to ESPN's Bomani Jones. We had the episode where we talked to Kevin Krieger, the Black Kentucky Derby jockey that boldly declared he was going to win the Kentucky Derby and ended up finishing 25th, and I don't even know if there were 25 horses in that race, Steve Willie. But yeah, like, it's been fun for me and Marcus just to kind of listen back to these old episodes we haven't listened to in 7-8 years and just hear the difference in the show. And you know, because right now we're still in the big, nasty Alfred Kunawa era.
Yeah, that's been an interesting experience, because I had never heard him before. And I've been following along, as I am a patron, and believe on episode 7 right now. And surprisingly interesting to go back and listen to a breakdown of the 2013 NFL draft. And I'm not even being sarcastic. It's really, it's kind of interesting to hear, like, you know, Manny Te'o, you know, how did he do? Like, the thought that he was going to, you know, he had the whole catfishing scandal, right?
Yep.
And the thought that he was going to be a big name out of Notre Dame and didn't quite work out.
No, I think he had a couple years in San Diego and I think two or three seasons in New Orleans. So he had a career. I was trying to figure out what adjective to put in front of career and just settled on he had a career. But yeah, like one of the things I've noticed about the old show, Steve, is that there's so much more production
Yes.
than the current show. And I think that's a function of both the technology, because now we record on StreamYard, and also just like we had so much more energy back then
It's
to
been different
spend. Like
times.
every break had music, and then we'd have little spots in between all the breaks and so much editing.
Pre-COVID, pre-Marcus Kid, pre
Yes.
simpler times, pre-age.
So I was gonna say 7 years younger.
Yes.
So yeah, you can check that out on the Kings of Sport Patreon. $5 gets you in the door. If you want to pay more, we won't stop you. Again, thank you for the support. And Steve and Scott are patrons. So if you want to sit at the cool table, then check out patreon.com/the Kings of Sport.
And for me, you can listen to my podcast, Feeling Good For Now, which is on all major podcast providers. It's also on the North South Wrestling Connection and the Place to Be Pop Experience. And we'll be taping episode 5 very soon. Had scheduling issues this week, as they always seem to happen. Now that the world is getting somewhat normal, we're like, oh, wait, we have to work now. Oh, wait. Kids are, oh, I gotta do this. Oh, okay. It's like the TDT talk delay. But yeah, if we look at
Yes.
positive news in the world, mental health tips, pop culture recommendations. It's been a pretty fun experience, and Nate has been very helpful in producing. And let's see, what else we got on the. I'll just take a quick look at the pop experience, because there, besides my show, Feeling Good For Now. Two shows I want to point out just friends of the program. I know Jordan Duncan and Andy Atherton host trivia shows, which, from what I understand, is the world's hardest pop culture trivia show. One of the recent questions was, how many Emmys did Pee-wee's Playhouse win? And I think it was something like 22. I don't know who knows that, but good on them. And I also learned today that Jimmy Smits, as I looked up his bio when we were talking, also played a repairman on Pee-wee's Playhouse. So that's the kind of synergy you get on our network. And with the basketball playoffs going on right now, Andrew Reich and Adam Murray, who my favorite Odd Couple podcast, the NBA team podcast, their relationship that they have, and didn't even know each other before doing this podcast with Andrew Reich, former Core Four member of Main Event, and his encyclopedic knowledge of basketball, yet his inability to accurately predict anything that's going to happen in basketball. And it's just a great show. I really, really enjoy it. And it's what, besides Kings of Sport, it is the only basketball show with basketball that I listen to for my news, because I need some entertainment along with my news. I don't need that. I don't need just Nick's talk from Stephen A. Smith, bringing him up a lot today. I don't need to know all the. I just want to know. Give me the facts. Give me what's going on, and give me some entertainment with it. And so, yeah, those are two shows that I listen to regularly. And then, Place to Be Nation Wrestling. We have us, of course, and plenty of other. You have the classic pay-per-view show, the one that started all the Place to Be podcast, and just a litany of other wrestling podcasts of current and past day. So, check out that.
It's like the here's the thing I will say about the Place to Be Wrestling Network, Scotty. Because I'm talking to Scotty right now, even though Steve is here. I'm talking to Scotty.
Yeah, we got to get him before he turns off the show.
Because like you always want to show out in front of the head honchos, Steve Willie. So Scotty, the grand poobah around these parts. Like there'll be times where I'll just be looking for a podcast, just something to work out to or something to fall asleep to in a good way. Like not that the content puts me to sleep, but I need something to wind down. And I'll just like almost do podcast roulette on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Excellent. And just find something. Like, the special relations is like fun. There was a, I'm trying to think, Wrestling's Chicken Salad. Like, they've got a couple good episodes that I just stumbled upon. Topics that I wouldn't even have been interested in, but they've made it interesting. And then, like, going back and catching up with on a lot of people's greatest WCW list.
Hmm.
Like, that's been interesting. Particularly a lot of the people on the network that were either too young to watch WCW in its heyday or were, you know, WWF only fans back in the day and have only started watching WCW in the now departed network era. So a lot of those shows are really interesting to listen to.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. And you have the NWA show that Scotty's a part of as well.
Yep.
So TNA, but I mean, not as good as our TNA show. Come on.
There's no such thing as a bad TNA show.
No.
Except for the shows that actually aired.
All right. Well, I mean, that's good of a transition we can get into if we're gonna.
Oh, shout out to shout out to mutual friend Jennifer Smith, Steve Willie.
Ah, yes.
And the, on the Jenny position
as well.
Yes, yeah. Sir Tim Capel and all those good people. But maybe my favorite show on the Jenny position, Steve Willie, is a show where the topic doesn't even have anything to do with me. I'm just there for the hosts, and that's a little something called Hot Toke, Steve Willie.
Ah, yes. Vanessa Shark, our good friend.
Yes. Here for everything, Vanessa Shark.
Yep.
And her and Jennifer Smith talking about weed for 45 minutes is an enjoyable time.
Even if you don't partake. It's only supposed to be a 20-minute show. It's only supposed to be a 20-minute show, but it just rambles on to 45 minutes because...
Well, yes. Oh, also, before we get into the main event... of the main event. We are in episode 174, Steve, and trivia note, there have been no NBA players to wear that number.
It's heartbreaking.
It's no random Eastern European swingman. No random 7-foot center from the Congo. Nobody's put that number on.
Still think we need a remedy. Couple baseball names. The big one is Kenley Jansen for the Dodgers reliever for several years. And one of my teams, the White Sox, unfortunately out for most of the year, but Eloy Jimenez, so their young star, is 74.
That's an odd number. Like, if this is just a strange number once you get this high. You're getting a lot of middle relievers.
Yes.
A lot of middle infielders that have just barely made the roster.
They were given one of the spring training numbers and then surprisingly good. And there were a bunch of injuries, so they had to call him up.
The random backup catcher. With the NFL, we've got a couple, Steve. Got some Hall of Famers that mm-hmm. wore 74. We got Henry Jordan, who is from my neck of the woods, Virginia. You got a... I couldn't remember which Matthews it was because there's so many Matthews, but it turns out it's Bruce Matthews that was 74. And then maybe my favorite 74.
I know where this is going.
Not for anything he did on the field, but for his great work on the small screen. Merlin Olsen.
With your boy Michael Landon.
Yeah. Where's the Little House on the Prairie podcast?
That's a good question. That should be a thing.
For everything.
Probably, yeah, they're Little House in the podcast. That would have to be the title.
Podcast
on the Prairie. Maybe that would
little,
work.
Oh, awesome. Like Little Podcast on the Prairie.
Yeah.
I feel though like anybody. Here's the thing though, Steve. It's the great conundrum. Anybody who would be enthusiastic enough to create a Little House in the Prairie podcast is probably maybe aged out of podcasting.
Yes. There are at least two Little House on the Prairie podcasts.
Wow.
The Walnut Grove cast, a commercial-free podcast that discussed every episode, and the Little House on the Prairie podcast. Oh, Melissa Gilbert herself released one. Wow.
That's got to be a hard...
Everyone is like, can you just get on with AEW? What are you talking about? What is this show from the 70s that you're talking about?
That's got to be a hard show to get to book guests for, though, because everybody on that show, I'm assuming, is no longer with us.
Pretty much so, yeah.
Like, maybe maybe some of the kids are still around.
Yeah, because Michael Landon died quite a long time ago.
Yeah, back in the 80s, yeah. So, yeah, but yeah, Merlin Olsen, you know, I just wanted to give Merlin Olsen his flowers.
Much, and Hall of Famer for the, what team was he on? Was he on the Raiders?
Here's the thing. Okay,
the Rams. I was so close.
Yeah, I was gonna say
with the Rams.
Here's the thing, Steve. Full disclosure, I wasn't sure if it was the Raiders or the Rams. I just wanted to go a long way for that Merlin Olsen FTD Flowers joke.
Yes. Okay, I got it now. So I was slow on the football. You were slow on the football team, but I was slow on the FTD.
Like that was the whole purpose of saving Merlin Olsen for last.
Oh, blew it.
Oh, but now it is time for the main event. The reason Scott Criscola called in sick this week, Steve Willie. Mm. Time to talk about maybe, you know, the number two promotion in the country, but the number one promotion in all of our hearts. All Elite Wrestling.
Double or Nothing, Chicks for Free, 2021. So, yeah, in front of a full house.
Yep.
At Daly's Place for the, they wanted, Jacksonville's the Wild West. It's in the Southeast, but it's really the Wild West. Anything goes. They're all, you can wear masks or not wear masks. We don't care at this point. let's just do this. And
yeah.
So they want to kind of go out with a bang. I want to talk about the card. I want to talk a little bit about the news of the new TV show and what that might mean. Just some prognosticating for the YouTube shows, Dark and Dark Elevation. And then I think the travel schedule, which will kind of intertwine with that as well. So, yeah, let's take a look at the card first. They just announced the buy-in match, which is their pre-show match, free on YouTube. And I sent that to this morning in our chat thread to Scott just to rub him the wrong way, because his big issue with and the match is the NWA World's Women's Championship between Serena Deeb, the champion, versus Riho. And Scott, I'll speak for now. He has no problem with Serena Deeb being the champion. I think she's done really well. I think she's thrown in the face of WWE, who thought that at, I believe, 34 years old, she's too old to be doing this, despite the fact that they have, AJ Styles and Edge and Randy Orton at the top of their card. But she's going against the returning Riho. Now, Serena Deeb was actually out injured for about 3 months. And that's why we didn't see her around. But, speaking for Scott, and I completely agree with him on this, like, she has not been shown on NWA programming at all. They referred to her because they just had a match between Thunder Rosa and Camille, and the winner was going to go up against Serena Deeb, and turned out, I believe it was a time limit draw. So his thing is, why is she just on AEW? Why is she not on NWA programming? And I would say, well, let's get Billy Corgan on the phone, because I'm not going to blame that on Tony Khan. Like, they can book her if they want to. She is their champion. I think Serena Deeb has had the, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend the match that she had with Red Velvet, who's one of the couple women, young stars in AEW that I'm really high on. They had a really fun match. I actually thought it was my match of the week from last week. Like kind of the surprise, Serena D was playing a little bit of a heel who was disrespecting the young upstart Red Velvet. I'm excited. Serena Deeb's definitely going to retain, but I'm a little bit more excited about the women's division than I was, say, in the previous couple years of AEW's development.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that has been a hole in their game since day one. And I think it's something they've acknowledged and something they've been working to improve upon. And I think they've taken a really unique path to fixing this problem, Steve, in the fact that, you know, we've got some pretty good in-house talent, so to speak, when you talk about somebody like Britt Baker or Red Velvet or Big Swole or Riho. And then we kind of infuse this element with the Japanese women that we've brought over. Unfortunately, now that's less of a sure thing because of what we talked about earlier with Japan and how they're handling COVID. And then we're bringing in, you know, these women from the NWA with Serena Deeb and Thunder Rosa, who was on AEW and had a great match with Britt Baker a few months ago. And then you got to talk also about Jade Cargill, who
that's my other
I think has, like, out of all of these women, you know, wrestling aside, just in terms of star potential, I think she's got the most potential of anyone.
She's got everything. A 5-tool player if she was a baseball player.
Yes, she would be Mike Trout, or maybe even more than Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
Because Mike Trout can't pitch.
The look, the talk, the attitude, just the
athleticism. Sheer
athleticism. The ability, you know, beyond her years to recognize where the camera is in the ring and to play to the crowd at home. Just, yeah, she's got everything.
Yeah. Like, I think that, you know, she is somebody who a year from now, like, she's already good, but a year from now, with a year of those in-ring reps on TV, like, she's going to be the centerpiece of this division. But, you know, in terms of Serena and the NWA, like, I don't know what the deal is. And you would think that she would have been one of your marquee people when you brought Power back, if I'm Billy. Like, I want to have all my champions on my first show back. And so I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if there's any friction, or I don't know if it's just a scheduling thing. But if I were the NWA, what I would do is get the belt off of her as soon as possible, because honestly, I think Serena probably would rather be in AEW than the NWA at this point. And if she doesn't want to be in the NWA, then she doesn't need to be holding that title.
Yeah, and is she even actually on the roster, I guess, at this point? Yeah, I'm trying to... I know that they're... I don't know what they're doing with the women's match at their NWA's pay-per-view yet. I know the main event is Nick Aldis and Trevor Murdoch. But yeah, that is an interesting situation. Is she even part of the roster? And if so, and this is why it's like looking at the NWA, like, okay, what are you doing? If it's pretty easy to put it on Camille, if that's the person who you're going to have full time.
And like, technically, again, like, even if she doesn't, like, let's say that, you know, in this hypothetical, and again, I'm just speculating, like, let's say there is legitimate tension or a legitimate grievance between the parties. This is wrestling. Like, she doesn't, like, all you have to do is get physical possession of the belt. She doesn't have to show up on TV. She doesn't have to wrestle. She just needs to put the belt in a FedEx box. And you can make up a storyline as to why she's no longer on the show.
Yes, she hasn't been defending the belt.
Yeah,
I totally agree. It's an interesting scenario that they have, and I wonder where you would think they're going to have her lose it in the NWA, but at this point, I have no idea Well, let's just stick with the women since we're already there talking about it. The Women's World Championship, Hikaru Shida, who has just surpassed 1 year of being the champ, and really like, and not just because she's from Japan, but the Asuka of AEW in terms of holding the title during a pandemic and being the go-to person versus Britt Baker, who has become, you know, I actually love this story. I've heard, well, she lost the match to Thunder Rosa, which was the lights out match. It didn't count on the record.
Right.
So why should, you know, Thunder Rosa should be number one. But I mean, I liked it because after she lost, she's like, hey, the match didn't count. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to move up the rankings by just going on AEW Dark and just beating up on jobbers, which was, that was the story. Yep. Like she's, because that's what they do with a lot of the talent. They just, they're all jobber matches. And so all of a sudden you got Austin Gunn showing up in AEW Dynamite with a 10-0 record. And so they, with Britt, they made it into a storyline and she had like the charts of, here you go. So now I've won another one and this person lost. So I'm moving up. So now she's the rightful number one contender. And I think it's her time. I think she does held the belt for a while and for, like I said, a long time. And she deserves, you know, credit for doing that. Whether, you know, she had some great matches. She had a great match with Nyla Rose. She had a really fun match with Ty Conti recently, where Conti stepped it up big time, I think. And now like definitely feels like it's Britt Baker's time to shine. She has been the face of the division since day one, and she's really come into her own over the last few months.
Yeah, like I love the Dark gimmick. I'm glad you brought that up, Steve, because not only is that perfect heel logic, but it's like it's video game logic for all of us that, you know, played you know, video games coming up. Like, yes, you're going to spam the hell out of the easier levels so that by the time you get to the hard level, your character is all the way leveled up. Or, right. You know, when I used to play Fight Night, when I was the champ, I would always pick the lowest ranked fighter I could find or they would allow to defend my title against, because, you know, I did all that hard work to win the title, Steve. Why should I have to prove myself now that I'm the champ?
Make your money.
Yes.
Make the same amount for two matches against lower card people than one match. Yeah. You know, you're going to win. I like it.
I like this a lot, and I think you're right. Like, I'm going with Britt in this matchup. I think not only have her matches just improved over the last couple years, but the character work, more importantly, has improved. And she is, you know, Jade aside, and maybe even more so than Jade right now at this moment, I think she's the most fully developed character in the division.
Yeah, kind of going through the roster, like so many more of the women that they've brought on, the exception of Thunder Rosa, are very much new to the business.
Mm-hmm.
And doing the matches and the reps on Dark and Elevation and seeing who can improve and take that next step up. And yeah, like she is the face and she's the one that is in the intro music several times. She's the one that's, I like the little story that they did. It was kind of lost in the shuffle, but they had, Forbes did a article on AEW.
Yes.
So they had the all the top people in the ring. And yeah, Britt Baker stole the title from Shida to hold it, and they had a little pull apart. And they asked her why I did it, and like, well, this article's coming out after the pay-per-view, and I know I'm going to win. So I thought that was just really, just this little bit of, in this throwaway, you know, kind of almost like an internet angle that ended up getting like a minute on Dynamite 1 week, just to do something like that. Like, she's turned into a great heel as opposed to the first few months of AEW when she would do guest commentary and just step all over herself. Really worked on improving that character part. And yeah, I think it's your time. All right, moving on. Let's see what else we got. Let's talk about your guy, Sting, and Darby Allin. Darby Allin, fresh off the loss to Miro for the TNT title, going against this new team of Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky in Sting's first ever non-cinematic match. Thank you, Tony Schiavone, in AEW. Actual
the qualifiers are amazing.
He actually said that. Like, wow, okay, thanks, Tony.
This is Sting's first non-cinematic match in AEW. He will actually be taking bumps. I think, first of all, like, Darby Allin is a freak of nature.
Mm-hmm.
He should not be walking right now with some of these bumps he's taken lately. He should be recuperating. That gif of the Tope Suicida did on Miro in their TNT title match a few weeks back is still like one of the craziest spots of the year, where he just ping pongs off of this guy.
It was like a pool ball hitting the wall of the pool table.
Yes. It's like, this is insane. But I like this matchup. I think they should have given it a little bit more time to cook. Either that or done more with Paige and Sky in terms of really hammering home their motivation, because they've given them promo time, and the promos have been good because it's Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. But I think they could have done more with this match. That being said, Steve, I think it'll be really fun. I think what we're most likely going to get is Darby playing Ricky Morton for most of this match, and just bumping around for these two, and then Sting getting a hot tag, doing the Sting thing, and ultimately, and this might surprise you, Steve, ultimately though, I think Sting is going to get double teamed and overwhelmed by these nefarious heels, and Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page win because Sting and Darby can absorb the loss.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think you've actually... Hey, by the way, I believe you and I were 100% at our last show, or maybe I definitely was 100% in terms of predicting the pay-per-view. So we gotta keep this up. The ones we follow the least were the ones we were the best at. So I'm going to probably get all these wrong. Wow, I am. This was probably the match that I'm struggling with the most over who's going to win, because I don't think you can pin Darby because he just lost to Miro.
Yeah,
Sting is the legend, but on the other hand, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky are this brand new team, and the angle here going forward is going to be Page versus Darby. They're going to they've both been talking about recreating the angle they had in Evolve, and which I really didn't see, but I know that was in, what was that name of that show on Vice TV that Damian Abraham did?
Oh, The Wrestlers.
Yeah, The Wrestlers. They did a little bit on that feud on The Wrestlers.
That was a good show. That was a good show. I'm surprised it didn't get a second season, especially considering how popular Dark Side has become.
Yes. I need to do one Steve Lee hot take here. I like The Wrestlers better than I like Dark Side of the Ring. I just like the documentary style of it. Going around into all these different countries. But yeah.
And it's a different vibe. Like, Dark Side living up to its name can be heavy.
Yeah.
Whereas The Wrestlers was very positive, which you would expect from Damian Abraham if you've talked to the man. He's always in high spirits.
Yes.
Much like Jennifer Smith and Vanessa Shark.
There you go. So, yeah, I was surprised that they put Scorpio in a tag team so quickly after having him
At
the last pay-per-view win the face of the Revolution. And I think I read an article with him, an interview with him recently that said he was kind of surprised too, but he's really enjoying the team with Ethan Page. I'll take Sting and Darby Allin, though. I think Sting will get the pinfall somehow, and then maybe eventually just get taken out by Paige and Sky, and then there's your program for Darby versus Ethan with no help.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that one going either way. But I do think whatever happens, they need to make sure that Ethan and Scorpio keep their heat.
Yes. So, yeah, maybe fluke roll-up or... You know, the deadly Stinger Splash combo with the Scorpion Death Drop. All right, next match. I'm kind of going just mixing stuff up here. Hangman Adam Page versus Brian Cage. A little bit of surprise that this made the pay-per-view, in my opinion. Page was ranked number one for quite a while to Omega's title. And I still think the long-term plan, and at least what I would do, would have Omega and Page eventually beat Omega to pay off their former tag team. And I, if that's the case, I like the slow burn that Adam Page is going to go against the Elite, the team that he used to be in. Brian Cage match I just watched literally this morning because I'm trying to catch up before the show. Ended up upsetting Adam Page. The Team Taz attacked Page before the bell, and Cage got the upset to knock him out of the number one spot. So this is the rematch. I don't think this would be... I don't think this is going to be much in doubt, I guess is what I'm going to say. I think Adam Page will win. There'll be all sorts of nefarious means. But Page winning and then working his way up to... At some point, pay-per-view, I don't know if it will be All In or All Out, whatever they're calling it these days, or Full Gear, but I think Page and Omega is where to go for the AEW World Championship. What are your thoughts?
I agree. And I think that, you know, it's a credit to AEW that they have kind of turned down the heat just a bit. You know, they've gone from the high setting on your, the eye on your stove. And just, you know, they haven't turned it off, but they've turned it down to about two or three. Just let it simmer for a while, because the one thing I would have hated was for Adam Page to have been stuck in the situation that Drew McIntyre was in, where your biggest win happens in a setting where it's muted. And even though they'll be in front of a live crowd now, like, they so easily could have rushed us with Page and Omega and done it, you know, two or three months ago, and it wouldn't have hit as much as it's going to hit 6 or 7 months from now, where we're fully back in terms of, you know, a crowd in either a Chicago, because that's where they always go, or, you know, another big town. And yeah, I think we're going to get a fun Haas match. There'll be plenty of Team Taz hijinks. Hook's gonna get his spot, because, you know, we're building future Hall of Famer Hook up here, but ultimately Paige wins, because Paige is the bigger story coming out of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dark Order will probably get involved in some way.
Yeah.
And speaking of Dark Order, they have at least three of their members, Evil Uno, Colt Cabana, and
they did miss an opportunity though in that last match, Steve, and shout out to John Pollock and Wei Ting over at Post Wrestling. It should have been a three-way with Cage, Page, and Christian Cage.
Absolutely. I thought they were going to go with the Cage and Cage tag team, because they were kind of...
in a cage, make it a cage match.
Yes. And then have
we got Cage, NWA, Cage, and Page in a cage.
have NWA come in to sponsor it, and then they can have a rat in the cage as well. They had all this... after the Sting match with Brian Cage and Ricky Starks, there was the respect angle that Brian Cage had with Sting. And I thought for sure that, you know, because Taz was trying to recruit Christian Cage, I thought for sure it was going to be the Cage and Cage Music Factory versus Team Taz. But alas, Cage Corey.
And maybe that was the plan before Ricky Starks got hurt.
Thanks, Ricky Starks. Yeah, because he broke his neck, unfortunately, but.
Yeah. He's another one. Like, I think, like, Ricky Starks is somebody, you know, when he comes back, like, that's somebody you can build on.
Yeah, they have so many incredibly young talents. It's just mind-blowing, like, guys like MJF, Sammy Guevara, Jungle Boy, or Jungle Boy Jack Perry, as Jim Ross will always tell you. It's like 23, 24, 25 years old, these guys. I mean, Hook looks like he's still in high school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Casino Battle Royal with Christian Cage, Dark Order, as I mentioned. Let's just go through them real quick. Seidel, Powerhouse Hobbs, Penta, Jungle Boy, Matt Hardy, Mark Quinn, Isaac Cassidy, The Blade. I don't see The Butcher, which is weird. Evil Uno, Cabana, Varsity Blondes, The Acclaimed, QT Marshall, my least favorite wrestler. Nick Mordo, Dustin Rhodes, and Lee Johnson. So you'll have some members of the Factory and the Nightmare Family. Speaking of the Nightmare Family, we're going off on a little tangent. I was in a Hot Topic last week. Went with my kid. He wanted to get some clothes and such. And I was looking through the clearance area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they still have a couple Bullet Club t-shirts. They have some AEW stuff. They had like a Moxley shirt. And then, lo and behold, they had a five decades Dustin Rhodes shirt in the middle of a Hot Topic in Wisconsin. Who? And I love Dustin Rhodes. Yes. He's one of my all-time favorites. But how did they think that a Dustin Rhodes five-decade shirt was going to sell to 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids? Or 20-something goths. It just blew my mind. There's a Colt Cabana shirt, too. Another one who, like, God bless Colt Cabana. The guy's, you know, responsible for a lot of independent talent making a ton of money.
Yeah.
But I don't know anybody who's buying a Colt Cabana shirt at Hot Topic. So, this, like, there's always the mystery in these casino battle royales. Brian Cage himself, one of them in the past. Mm-hmm. Matt Sydal, one of them in the past. So there is that question mark of who could possibly be the mystery person. And there's part of me, like, my thought could be Andrade.
Ooh.
That's that, because I could see that he has a match with Kenny coming up in Mexico for Triple Mania. That's my pick of who's going to be Kenny for that belt. Impact, I have no idea. But besides that, Christian Cage, I can see, because the winner gets a title shot. And this one, I don't see Phoenix in here. Maybe Penta would be number two. But besides that, I don't see many possibilities besides Christian and Penta and whomever the question mark is.
Yeah, see, Phoenix, if Phoenix were healthy, because apparently he's hurt right now.
Okay. So.
Yeah, Meltzer reported, I want to say a week ago, that he had gotten injured in Mexico. And so he won't be at the show. But who knows? You know, it's wrestling. But I thought Penta could be an interesting choice, because there was about a month and a half, 2 month stretch that we had, Steve, where if Phoenix wasn't main eventing, he was having the match of the night.
Right.
And so it seemed like they were really building towards something with Rey Fénix. So I would have loved for him to have been the guest, the secret entrant, but I like Andrade. I didn't even think of Andrade, but I like that, particularly, like you said, you know, they're having the match in AAA, and then, you know, it's almost like a home-and-home series.
Yeah, where Kenny can beat Andrade, and Andrade will beat Kenny in Mexico.
Yeah. I like that pick, so And that's the other thing. Like, just looking at the names, like, there's talent in here, but there's nobody that I see right now on this list that is really ready, other than Christian.
Yeah, this is a pretty weak battle royal. This is their weakest one in terms of roster.
Like the Blade's not getting a title shot. Mark Quinn is not getting a title shot.
Yeah,
like QT Marshall. If QT Marshall gets a title shot, I might have to join Scotty on the dark side and start hating this promotion.
Yeah, there's not even really any, like, surprise possibilities. Maybe Jungle Boy would be a surprise.
But I could maybe see that for like a big episode of Dynamite,
mm-hmm.
like building towards a one night. You know, Jungle Boy versus Kenny match, which would probably be a pretty good match, but like, that's not a pay-per-view match.
No.
So I think it's got to be either Christian or the mystery entrant.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are my two. And then Penta as a possibility. This is a match that is definitely something. Anthony Ogogo with the Factory, who's got another guy, a lot of potential versus, yeah. The American jingoism, like Cody Rhodes, with one of the
Let me tell you something, Steve Willie.
bizarre promos out of nowhere.
There's a lot of talk going on right now, Steve, about what's going on these podcasts in America. But I'm telling you, Steve, I'm proud to be an American because there was a time. I'm in Virginia. That's in the South, if you look on your map, Steve. And there was a time when black people and white people couldn't podcast together. But I look at my niece, who's 100% black, not half black, half white. But anyway, I still look at my niece and I say, if you want to, you can podcast with a white person because this is America.
Oh, my gosh. That was...
What was that, Steve Willey? And...
Like, it was
here's the thing, like I think if I get like I get what he was trying to do, Steve. Like I understand the attempt and like the attempt and the delivery. Like the delivery was fine. Like the delivery was Cody, you know, Cody passionate promo number 100.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you just plug that into a machine and that's what you get. But like the way that it hit, and particularly when you talk about the way that it hit with a lot of people on social media, it continues to make Cody look bad in this feud in terms of like, you've got people that are actually rooting for Anthony Ogogo in this.
Yes, because his quote unquote anti-Americanism was actually kind of subtle. It was just more like,
right,
I'm from Britain. Here's my British flag. Put the Union Jack on you. And then not only like how powerful his promo Cody Rhodes was.
Yes.
But the length that it just kept going.
And it was like you would think that this was the main event, the way that promo came off.
You would think he was running for president and trying to bring red and blue states together. Because there was a definite part of that as well.
Like, yes.
I'm going to appeal to everybody and I'm going to end all the strife in this country. I thought he came up with a fourth vaccine. So bizarre. And I'm going to have a pretty baby.
here's the thing, Steve. Like, I think you can only use the pregnant wife and kid line like so many times. And I think he wasted it on this feud.
Yeah. I mean, the point of the feud is, and I do hope Ogogo wins. Like, look, you know, it's another way to make new stars, and mm-hmm. Cody can put him over. And definitely, this shouldn't be here to raise up QT Marshall as much as it did. But like, just have him be a manager. You know, they have their few guys in there. Which you guys, Bailey's? I shouldn't say this is pretty rude, but Bailey's ex-fiance is Aaron Solo, and Nick Comodoro, who's in the Battle Royal, like. You know, here's a chance to raise up these students and make new stars.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, I kind of do hope Ogogo wins, but I feel it's going to be Cody.
I think you articulated what I was trying to think of, the, you know, in the days and weeks after that promo, Steve. Like, why did it feel so off besides, like, the random political tone? It's that the level of response was not commensurate to the level of offense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it would have been one thing if Ogogo had introduced Brandy or Cody's family into the feud.
Yeah.
But all he did was your typical wrestling sneak attack, and then he put the flag over him.
Right.
And then in response, Cody comes back with a 20-minute Dusty and 86 promo.
And it wasn't like it was the Russian flag or, right. You know, a Chinese flag.
We're allies with Britain.
Great Britain.
We have a special relationship, as we mentioned earlier.
Hey, he represented the country in the Olympics, right? Like, he was a British boxer. And then the follow-up to Cody was the factory and, like, a backstage thing. And Anthony Ogogo's like, yeah, I really don't like this country, but I'm here to make the American dollar because that's that part I do like about it. That's the retort. Like, yeah, I can get that. Yeah, we do kind of suck lately, but the dollar's good. I hear you. I can't really argue with you.
Yeah, so I hope this is, and you know, it's something people have been talking about for at least a year now, Steve. I hope this is all leading to this elaborate, wonderful Cody Rhodes heel run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, when he was doing running with the TNT title, he was acting heelish in a lot of the matches.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime it was, like he had a match with Orange Cassidy about 6 months ago, right after he won the belt back from Brody Lee, and he was acting very heelish in that match as well. And, you know, so depending on his opponent, but yeah, it is definitely something. He knows how to get attention to himself. And I, you know, give him credit for that. This was just a weird one.
Yeah.
He's had several hits. You can't deny that.
Yeah. Cody's a great promo. Like I'll never take that away from him. It's just the situation did not warrant this promo and the content was a little off.
Yeah. Well, maybe there'll just be an F Brexit chant at the.
And the other thing with this, like, you know, not only can you not go to the pregnant wife and the unborn child, well, but so many times, you really can only pull out the Dusty Rhodes card like twice. Like I think, like you can go to that Dusty Rhodes well twice in this entire AEW run, and you're using it on this feud that doesn't warrant you bringing up your legendary dead father.
Correct.
For one night only, I'm going to be the American dream, Cody Rhodes. Like, why?
Yeah, like, let's move on. You know, TNT Championship, Cody's the former champ, but now it's Miro.
Yes.
And he is going up against good guy Lance Archer. I'm confused. He comes out, he's kind of like yelling at Sting. No, they're kind of mutual respect with Sting. He comes out the good guy side, but he doesn't act like a good. So I'm excited about this match because Miro has been the monster we've been waiting for the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. And Lance Archer has been a monster since he started. So I like two big boys beating each other up. Miro obviously going to, retain. He just won the belt. Gosh, like 3 weeks ago at this point off of Darby. Might have even been less than that. So, yeah, Miro against Lance Archer. I think Miro gets the win. I'm fine with Jake Roberts not being involved in this match at all because I don't think Lance Archer needs him anymore if he's going to be a face. And Jake just looks kind of old and weird out there.
Yeah, the TNT title match, it was exactly 2 weeks ago because that was right when I'd gotten the vaccine.
So it's your fault.
Yes. So, but like, this is what we've all been waiting for from Miro, you know, from the former Rusev. This side of him, not the video game playing best man, like bumbling sidekick version of Miro, like just this killer, like that Darby match. Like I went back and watched it again a week ago, mm-hmm. and it's like a really good TV match. And it's the kind of it's a rare thing that they accomplished, Steve, in that you had a definitive one-sided victory where the person that was dominated didn't lose face in the defeat.
Yeah, because he was
like they managed to like destroy Darby, and Darby still came out looking good, and Miro was elevated also.
Right, and even the finishing move when he did his that game over, like the camel clutch, and then he leaned all the way back on it. I've never seen him do that before. Even against like Cena. So yeah, Darby, not even an excuse, but he went in injured. He got attacked before the bell, so he's basically a dead man before the match even started. But then to contrast that with this upcoming match where you're not going to be able to do that to Lance Archer, you know. Mm. We'll hopefully show how versatile he can be. Because Lance Archer, despite his age, this has been the prime of his career this past year.
Yeah, this should be a good little Haas fight. But again, like I don't think anybody who's been watching pro wrestling more than a week would expect for Miro to lose the title at this point.
All right, and two more matches. Stadium Stampede match. Stadium Stampede 2, the Inner Circle. versus the Pinnacle. This is the other match I'm going back and forth with, because if the Inner Circle loses, they have to disband. So immediately I think, oh, well, the Inner Circle is going to win. But then you think, well, why did they have the Pinnacle win Blood and Guts then a couple weeks ago?
Right.
Or three weeks ago, if they're going to do this. And all I can see Ortiz and Santana doing just fine on their own. Mm-hmm. I can see Chris Jericho doing fine on their own. I'm not sure what Jake Hager would do. Sammy Guevara could, you know, be up in the TNT Championship division. So then I lean to the Pinnacle, but then I keep going back and forth. And my hope is that I don't think it's going to be as fun as the first match, because I loved the first match.
No.
But I just don't think you have that comedy aspect that, like, Paige brought with the horse chasing after. And, you know, they had the whole golf cart story with Matt Hardy and Sammy and the swimming pool of reincarnation for Matt Hardy calling back to the TNA days. There's just not going to be that comedy there. So how are they going to do this? Is it just going to be like a hardcore match? Is it going to be taped? I would think it's going to be taped, because the first one was taped for like 12 hours, I believe. They taped it the whole day before. Are they going to bring the crowd into it somehow? But what are your thoughts on this? I'm excited for it just because I love these different kind of matches. I like when they take chances. WWE does, or AEW. I like when they take chances with different ideas.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting match because, A, it's surprisingly difficult to pick the winner, even though I would lean towards the Pinnacle winning. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I feel like this is coming way too soon on the heels of Blood and Guts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're right. It's not going to have the same feel as the last Stadium Stampede, because it can't, because this feud is much more serious than that one was. I think you're going to get a lot of, like, you're going to get the creativity without the comedy in this one. Like, I think they'll do a lot of innovative spots, and then, you know, they'll do some crazy spots that they probably shouldn't do, just thinking about the safety and well-being of these people.
Yeah.
Particularly some of the people that are getting up there in age. but it'll be fun. And I think I'm going to go with the Pinnacle.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards too. Yeah, don't.
I think the other thing, Paige and Omega,
drinking beer and milk, unfortunately.
Yeah, right. Well, the other thing I think is they shouldn't have. I think they needed to hold off on either this match or the SCU match, because the team breakup stipulations are coming too close together.
Yeah.
And I think you could have held off on SCU until after the pay-per-view.
Yeah. And this, I talked about this with Scott in the last episode, the sheer amount of, like, literal blood feuds that have been going on a weekly basis. To be able to, and maybe they didn't know, like, I would have done Stadium Stampede first here and then done Blood and Guts live, but
right,
maybe they, you know, this is all pretty new. Maybe they didn't know they were going to be touring so quickly.
And honestly, that makes it, well, I think it's a couple things. I think they weren't sure about the touring status, but they also, you know, wanted to please the network with that Blood and Guts number. But it does make more sense if you reverse them, because you could have the Inner Circle win Stadium Stampede, and then the next thing is, you know, MJF goads Jericho into putting the Inner Circle up.
Yep.
For Blood and Guts.
Right.
And then that makes, you know, Sammy quitting on Jericho's behalf even more gut-wrenching for them, because he had to break up the team to save Jericho, and maybe they do a better looking stunt to end that match.
Yes.
But I think that works better.
As you mentioned, like, owing the network that number, that was 3 weeks ago, so it was the 5th. That's prime sweeps period. you know, amazed that like all the season finales are going on as well. So there's probably something to that. Yeah, I just kind of wish that was, you know, July or August that they could have done that Blood and Guts match live, because, you know, that was a plan all along, was to do that on TNT for a special episode, and then pandemic happened and canceled that all. So yeah, I like the pick of the Pinnacle too. It's just more interesting in terms of story going forward. And then finally, we have our three-way match for the title. Kenny Omega, the champion, with Don Callis.
Oh, you skipped Scotty's favorite match.
I did?
The tag title match.
Oh, I don't even have that up right now. The Young Bucks are going up against John. Yeah, it's not on the page that I have up. I forgot about this. John Moxley and Eddie Kingston versus Young Bucks. I'm actually really excited about this. I love the Eddie Kingston, John Moxley team.
Yeah, they were really good as opponents, but like this team it's the tag team I didn't know that I needed.
Yeah.
And just like not even the in-ring stuff, but their promos are really strong. And I think Kingston has made Moxley better.
Yes.
Just definitely. Because Kingston's got this weird energy to him that just meshes with Moxley's weird energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you believe that these are two guys that would just as easily drink a beer together, and then 5 minutes later, they're beating the hell out of each other. And then 10 minutes after that, they're drinking a beer again.
Yes. I saw an interview with Moxley that their promos have been completely unscripted.
Yes.
And so they're just riffing. And so there was one interview I saw recently, one of the promos that there was a cut in the middle of it. I'm like, oh, I wonder if they made a mistake. But then I read later that they'd just been riffing, so they probably had to edit these promos
time.
Way down. But I can watch a buddy comedy with these two guys. Did you see a few weeks ago where they attacked the Elite's trailer with a car, kind of like an old kind of cheesy WCW, WWE mm-hmm. thing? And Moxley took like a tire iron or something and threw it through the window of the trailer, and Kingston was too close to him. And he's just like, geez, like at least wait until I'm out of the way before you throw it. Oh, God, it is just good stuff. I really hope they win, but there's probably, because I love the team and I want to see them stay together. The Young Bucks, this is the exact same characters that they played in PWG for a long time. You know, they're playing like, and they're saying Excalibur is like, I've never seen him like this before. And it's like, no, this is, you know, if you watch that stuff from back in the day, it's the exact same character, down to the same mannerisms even.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of fun. I hope he was able, Matt Jackson was able to get the blood off of those Jordans. That was hard to watch the old retro Jordans getting Christopher Daniels blood all over, the white parts. Very sad day. Who are you?
That was a strong match, even though they, again, like, I feel like that's something that we could have built to after.
And you knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. But I thought that was a strong match. But in this match, I feel like it's going to be fun. It's going to be chaotic. But I do think the Bucks retain. Because I think it works for the Kenny, like, because they're tied into the Kenny storyline.
Right.
And I think them being the tag champ strengthens Kenny. But also, like, I don't think Mox and Kingston need the belts to be taken seriously.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah. What do you think of the Good Brothers hanging around in this storyline? You can tell my tone then how I feel about it.
It feels like the Good Brothers have friends in high places
mm-hmm.
who are willing to pay them to just kind of hang around.
They're like the
modern day equivalent to the Harris Brothers in TNA without all of the racist signage.
They look like clowns anyway. But they've had promos where the five of them and plus Don Callis are together, and the Young Bucks are saying how they're the greatest tag team in history. And the Good Brothers are just standing right there behind him.
like
not yes, reacting to it at all.
We can't disagree.
Nope. Not agreeing, not disagreeing, not giving them the side eye, not anything.
Right.
I think this could just be Kenny and the Young Bucks and Don Callis, and it would be much better. Like, even with interference, you don't need two more guys even to interfere like they did in the SCU match. You have enough people that you can just cheat on your own, which would make it the characters even stronger heels.
Yeah, I think the main reason they're here, and I feel like maybe we'll lose them after this storyline gets concluded, is A, obviously, the Bullet Club connotations, but B, for this Impact story.
Yeah.
Because I feel like once we get to the story of Paige versus Kenny, then it just needs to be Kenny, Callis, and the Bucks, because then it's like Paige versus all of his old friends.
Because
Paige really doesn't have a connection, at least in AEW, to Anderson and Gallows.
And Anderson and Gallows just really don't fit in the tag division of AEW.
No. Like, Impact, you can kind of work with them and work around them.
Mm-hmm.
In AEW, like, when you're in there, like, not even a... And this is going to sound like a sideways compliment, but I'm just kind of showing where the pecking order is. Like, not even a high-profile team. You could put them in there with the Acclaim, and the Acclaim are going to run circles around the Bullet Club, around the Good Brothers.
Yeah, same with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus.
Yeah, Private Party.
Evil Uno and Stu Grayson probably would do that as well.
Like we're not even talking about like Phoenix and Penta. Like that's
that's obvious. Yeah. Even the Bucks, like that wouldn't be a match I would really be interested in seeing either.
Like QT Marshall's unnecessary stable. Like they. I don't even know if they have a tag team name, but QT students.
So yeah, main event: Kenny Omega, Don Callis versus Pac and Orange Cassidy, set up by a very, very rare no contest match. And they very rarely have disqualifications or countouts. Did you happen to see that match between Pac and Orange Cassidy?
I did. I assume you're alluding to kind of the way the match ended.
Yeah. And for those who didn't know, Orange Cassidy got legitimately hurt on a powerbomb by Pac. He just kind of landed funny on his head. And so they did an audible, which, I mean, good for them to, at this point in my life, I don't need to see people who are injured continue wrestling the match, because that's how you're tough and that's what you do. He did a couple things, and but then Callis came out and they just kind of ran an audible and made it so that it was basically a no contest, and it was going to be a three-way match for the title, which was where they were going anyways. They just went a roundabout way of doing it. It didn't come off the best on TV, but that's fine. I would be saying the same thing if WWE did something like that. Like, they had the match with Sheamus and Humberto Carrillo a few weeks ago, and while it was not as important of a match, Sheamus landed wrong on him, they just called for the bell, and they could figure that stuff out later. Much better they do that than the Sammy Guevara-Matt Hardy incident of 2020.
Yeah, like you said, like, on TV, it didn't work the best, it didn't flow the best, but you understand why they did it.
Yeah. So this is another one Kenny Omega, I'm sure, is like 99% sure that he's winning.
There's no reason to, like, neither, as much as I like Pac, and as much as everybody not named Scott Criscola likes Orange Cassidy, like, I feel like neither one of them are nearly hot enough right now even be considered to take the belt off of Kenny. Plus, like, Kenny's there. Like, there's so much story for Kenny. And the ultimate end game is Hangman and Kenny, so it makes no sense to divert from that path.
No, not at all. I think this will be a fun match. It reminds me a bit of when Moxley was against Eddie Kingston, when Kingston came in and Moxley defended the belt against him. Like, you knew who was winning that match. It was a strange main event for a pay-per-view since you knew who was going to win that match.
Right.
But it was still enjoyable, and you get why they did it. I don't even know if this will be the actual main event or if it will be Stadium Stampede. I don't know how they're going to do that. I think it depends on how they film Stadium Stampede. But
It could be, Cody and a go-go.
Well, that's the real main event.
How many times do you get to see the American Dream Cody Rhodes come down that aisle, Steve?
This will be the first. So does this mean that Arn Anderson's going to dress up as Baby Doll?
Oh, in Jennifer Smith's wildest dreams.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's Double or Nothing. We always talk about how it's
solid card
overpriced. But, yeah, I think it's especially at the top of the card. Three matches, especially the title match, the Stadium Stampede match, and the Young Bucks, Moxley, Kingston match are going to be a lot of fun. There's, with the exception of Page and Cage, and I really enjoy Adam Page, and Brian Cage is good for what he is as well, and the Battle Royal, I think there's nothing bad on this card.
No. I understand if somebody, is like, that's a good card, but it's still like a little bit pricey.
Mm-hmm.
I could get it. I think that's something that they will eventually need to address, Steve. I think even if it's something as simple as doing like a package deal where instead of dropping $50 for four shows, we do $150 for all of them and you basically get a show for free.
Yeah.
I think there's a way with the economics of this that they can, kind of figure that out. And I think that'll tie into also kind of the TV talk to kind of wrap things up with AEW. But I think it's going to be a good show. There's not a lot of mystery for me, though. I don't think there's a lot of intrigue in terms of who's going to win some of these key matches. But the in-ring, the bell-to-bell should be good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it very much. My biggest problem with the price is that during a pandemic when you couldn't have like a get together, because when you only have four events a year, I think that is something that you can, get the friends together and watch the show and like the old days and split it up. But over the past year, you obviously couldn't do that. And I'll be ready to do that for the next show, maybe, but not this one yet. So, yeah, quick TV talk. They announced that there's going to be a third hour, which has been long discussed, but this will be on Friday starting in mid-August on TNT after SmackDown. It's a Rampage, I believe it's called. And
yeah, Quentin Jackson's going to be the host.
Yeah, of course.
Quentin Jackson and Stephen A. Smith are your commentators.
Oh, gosh, that would be something. So eventually, in beginning of the year, for multiple reasons, Dynamite and this new show will be on TBS. And not that big of a deal in my eyes.
They actually gain potential viewers going to TBS. Yeah,
very few, but, and this is like a few hundred thousand, I believe, like 400,000.
Yeah. Like even if you only pick up, 10, 15% of that, that's still a decent little bump for you.
Yeah, I think so too. So my question on this that, and maybe it's just I'm listening to the wrong podcasts or something or reading the wrong articles. Lately, you've had Dark and Elevation, not lately, but since the pandemic started, you've had these 12 to 15 match shows.
Yeah.
Where not one of the matches is up in question. It's almost like the old Superstars are, you have one or two kind of featured matches, but you know who's going to win, and the rest are just jobber squash matches.
And I know Superstars were 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, and I know why they're doing it. That Tony Khan wanted all these independent people to be able to make some money during the pandemic and get some reps and stay active in it. I think that's very laudable. However, they're going to start turning you know, doing live gates and doing live shows. And, you know, I haven't been to a Dynamite, but I've been to a couple of the pay-per-views live. And I know how they did it before the pandemic, where they would do like 3 matches, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And the show was like 45 minutes to an hour. And they would do 2 matches before the show. And then 1 match after the show, kind of like Raw would do the dark match afterwards and have like a kind of a fun match. And that's, you know, so you have basically a 3-hour live show. They're not going to be able to have 15 matches.
No.
Before your local, you know, taping in St. Louis or wherever, and end up having a 6-hour show. So my question is, like, when, like, is Rampage going to be taped at the same time? Are they going to have 2 tapings and do, like, Dark before Dynamite and Elevation before Rampage? Like, how many matches are those going to be? And mm-hmm. then where are all these independent wrestlers who've been in the crowds and on these shows? What's going to happen with them? And maybe that's something we can talk, that part we can talk maybe a little bit more in July when we see what's going to happen. Because, you know, I think some of them, like I'm thinking like of a Denny Limelight is a guy who keeps popping out as being very good. Like, will some of those people stay around? Mm. Or are they going to be able to go out as the independent shows open and be like AEW's Danny Limelight? You know, use that to make some a little bit more money there. And I just don't know how that's going to happen. But I just can't imagine Dark and Elevation being the same as it has been.
No, and honestly, it would not surprise me if they got folded into each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, whether it's Dark or Dark Elevation or just Elevation, like, I think those two entities become one show. Because if not, you're spreading yourself a little too thin.
Yeah.
I think with Rampage, that's going to be really interesting because you're talking about a show Friday nights at 10
mm-hmm.
with that hot SmackDown lead in. I think like it's a really good move for AEW, and I love that Tony Khan apparently had the option to make Dynamite 3 hours and went this route instead.
Pretty smart.
Yeah. In terms of how they structure the shows, I think you've almost got to have like 2 crews where we've got like our main Dynamite team. And then we've got the Rampage / Dark Elevation, whatever you call it, team, because then, you know, you're talking about a 1-hour show with maybe whatever you do for your YouTube, like that, that's another hour. And that's something manageable. You know, even if you go to an hour and a half for that, you're still only talking 2.5 hours for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dynamite's its own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just keep it separate. I'll be intrigued how they do it. Like, will they do 2 shows a week? Because then you're also running the risk of, and they're going to, like, it's another thing. I just keep going back and forth in my mind, like how much revenue they lost during the pandemic and mm-hmm. doing 2 shows a week, getting the live gates there. But then, you know, do you burn out the crowd? I mean, like, the thing about Dynamite when it first began is it felt like an event.
Right.
Well, like it was, you know, I believe it was live each week. At the beginning, they just went to live and tape once COVID hit. So, yeah, I think, like, especially with all the extra talent, all the extras. And the other thought I had is, like,
the other thing. Like, this is a pretty, like, it doesn't feel like that if you just watch Dynamite. But this roster is actually pretty full when you factor in, like, a lot of the indie talent.
Right.
And so there's a lot of space. There's a lot of bodies, I guess you to say, Steve, that could fill up that time.
And so many of those talents aren't even signed.
Mm.
Like Red Velvet didn't get signed until March.
Right.
She didn't get signed until after. She wasn't even fully signed during that Shaq match. So yeah, like, and the other thought I have is like, do they do dark and elevation? Do they just keep that in Daly's place and do it without fans and just have matches that way and continue to have some of these people? So
That's not a bad option.
I do. I'm excited about it because it's not predictable. We don't know what's going to happen. We can actually like think like these are thoughts that we haven't had to have before because it was just we're taping at the Superdome or the Thunderdome or Thunderdome or Thunderstruck or whatever, and we're taping at Daly's place or QT Marshall's school. Now there's actual like, oh, I wonder how these shows are going to go. How many tickets are they going to sell? How are they going to do the seating? Are they just going to throw a full house in? Are they? Yeah, so yeah, it'll be cool this summer to see how, in at least the wrestling world, they pivot back to whatever normal they can get to.
And it, like, this kind of wrapping up on the TV thing, Steve, like, it's really good for AEW, obviously, but it's also good for the business because it's another, like, a sign that, this network is actually invested in AEW. And so the fact that, like, they're at this point, Steve, where not only do they have two shows on a national cable network, but also they're going to get quarterly specials, like
Yeah.
Clash of the Champions, back in the day. And so, like, I'm sure all of this extra programming came with the extra paycheck.
Yeah, they
So, like,
certainly implied that there was more money involved.
yes. So, like, AEW in a relatively short time, Steve, has really solidified itself as somebody that's going to be around for a while. Like, this is not some fly-by-night company that, we found this money mark and got him to waste his money on something other than the Jaguars. Like, this is a legit company with legit corporate backing. Even though who knows what the hell Turner and Warner Brothers and all that are going to be after the Discovery purchase. But I think this is a good sign for AEW and for the business.
Yeah, I do too. And that's good for fans. It's good for the workers. Good for everybody. All right, Nate. With that, we should maybe tell we can tell Scott that at this time period, at this, we'll say exactly at 90 minutes that he can come back on and listen to the podcast again. We miss you, Scott. We miss you on the show. This might be the first episode of Main Event that Scott wasn't on at all.
I mean, he knew his role. He knew, that when we out here talking about the greatest company in the world that has never made any mistakes whatsoever.
No.
Like, a company so great that other people's champions willingly come to this company. Companies that have great esteemed technical grapplers like Orange Cassidy carrying on the legacy of men like Lou Fez. Just twisting a knife in the Scotty. Just it's like we're gonna hear from him when he gets back.
We'll just press mute on our microphones and let him have 10 minutes to just yell into the ether.
Just let him get it all out. Just it's all right. But yeah, like, Scotty will be back on the next episode of the show. If you want to send Scotty either his condolences for having to listen to this AEW filled episode, or maybe congratulations because he's on his way to becoming the new announcer for Raw in 4 weeks after Jimmy Smits flames out. You can follow Scotty at PTB Podfather on Twitter at PTB Podfather.
Indeed, you can find me. Let's see, on Instagram at SteveWilly1. I just started a Twitter account because that seemed like a smart thing to do in 2021 was after people have been on there for 10 years, like really get those followers. But you can look up Feeling Good For Now for the podcast. I think it's feeling at Feeling Good For One, but if you put Feeling Good For Now in, it pops up. And
Steve
yeah, we're
Willie
followed.
already being followed by luminaries in the entertainment industry.
Yes, you know, second Baby Doll reference. That was the most random person following. You know, you think like, you know, I'll just, you know, have like my actual friends follow me most likely, because I had a Twitter, you know, account long ago, and I had, you know, had you a couple hundred followers or whatever. Like, well, this will just be something to put some, you know, positive news stories out there and just remind my friends, like, when the podcast comes out. And wasn't expecting anything. And then out of nowhere, Baby Doll is following Feeling Good For Now. Like, how did this happen? I tried to trace back. I went on her page. I don't want to say what's on her page. And the only thing I can think of is that she was following the NWA show with Scotty and saw that I followed and just followed back. And it'll be interesting to see how long she stays around, because I don't know if she's going to necessarily like some of the content I probably put out there.
So let me tell you something, Baby Doll. When you listen to Feeling Good with Steve Willie, he's going to talk about positivity and drinking Mountain Dews and eating all the finest pizza in the world, Daddy. That's how you get to the podcast pay window, if you will. Yes. Follow Steve or follow the podcast, because it's a good show. And I'm not just saying that because I have edited it so masterfully and produced it.
All right, Nate, where can everyone find you there?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at @in8, MOZAIK. You'll find links to the Kings of Sport. You'll find links to the Patreon. The latest thing up on my Twitter feed is a lot of Black Lightning talk this week. It was the series finale of Black Lightning on the CW this past Monday. So being one of the members of the Black Lightning podcast, we had a live show last night. So we had a pretty good turnout for that, Steve. We talked for 2 hours about the episode and just thoughts in general as the series is ended after 4 years prematurely. And, you know, we had one of the writers from the show in the chat just, you know, commenting along. I think we had a good number of people just leaving feedback and thoughts and memories of the show. So if you're interested in the Arrowverse on the CW, you can check out the Black Lightning podcast at @BL_podcast. And then, of course, Post Wrestling, the Rocky Maivia Picture Show, is available on Post Wrestling, as well as we've got a new project in the works, Steve, which should be announced in the coming weeks. So you can check that out at postwrestling.com.
All right. And that's pretty excited. I'm excited about the Naomi show that just got announced, too. I got that book.
Yes. So
that will be.
I did as well. Matter of fact, I got it as a gift. A friend sent me the copy of the Naomi volume or season one or volume one. I can't remember which one it's called, but it's something similar to that. And it looks like, I haven't read it yet, but I just kind of flipped through the pages and the story looks really interesting with this character that is relatively brand new.
Yeah, that's what I'm excited about, because you can hop onto the TV show and not have to get stuck with years of canon. So
the TV show done by Ava DuVernay. So I'm excited for that. Like, I think between that and the Superman show that's on right now, that you could tell they've put some money behind. Like, I think this is like a new era is beginning for these CW superhero shows.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to.
They're like, we have to compete.
Naomi recap.
Yeah, well, they're like, we have to compete with all these streaming networks, so we've actually got to put some money into these shows.
I actually care.
We just can't have Grant Gustin dragging, jogging in place and speeding it up and making people think he's running fast. poor Grant. But yeah, so if you're interested in CW stuff, like I think we talked a little bit about Naomi this past week on the Black Lightning podcast, but that should be a really interesting show when it debuts.
Excellent. All right, then, for Nate, for Scott, we wish you well, Scott. We'll see you next show. And for myself, Steve Willie, this has been the main event, episode 174. We will catch you next time.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Yes, Nate Milton.
It's such a shame Scott couldn't join us this week.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, Scotty, he's kind of our QT Marshall.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
He's this lovable, cantankerous figure that formed his own random stable with random individuals that don't quite seem to fit, but it just works.
Hail Britannia.
There's no punchline here. Like
this, that's all.
We're just Moxley and Kingston in it up right now. We're just riffing, baby.
Hey, at least get out of the way before you throw that down.